are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
The AB Beth Berkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Hope you had a good weekend. Pretty hot in my neighborhood, and some hot topics to talk about, too, in the wake of that unspeakable church massacre in Charleston, South Carolina. The love, the forgiveness pouring out of the families of those victims. Astounding. We'll talk about that. Also, the bugaboos in our culture that no one really wants to talk about, but we have to. Racism, gun control, the Confederate flag, which still waves near the State House, but in South Carolina, I think it's going to come down. The governor, Nikki Haley, came out yesterday in what I guess I would characterize as a portrait of convenient courage, as so many other politicians have joined the bandwagon because it's safe now to say it's time. And Mississippi today may be pulling it down, too. So I know some people are mad about that, but, you know, better late than ever, right? We'll talk all about those hot topics. We're going to have a guest today to address the idea of compassion and civility in public discourse, something which we try to do when we talk about current events and stories unfolding in real time. Aspen Baker was to join us, but she had a personal emergency, so we'll try to have her back another time. But you and I can chat. If you're listening live on Tuesday, June 23rd, I'd love to have you in the mix. The number is in motion at 347-857-4505. That's 6 a.m. out west. It's 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, and noon here in the east. Twitter feed, of course, don't forget about our 24/7 Twitter feed. You can chime in about anything and everything, whether you're listening live or on podcast. So if it's 6 a.m. somewhere, you can chime in too. Ed A.B. writes, the show today brought to you in part by State Farm. If you switch your auto insurance to State Farm today, you can save up to $500. Also by Audiophile, from music to books to podcasts, to rest your ears with everything you want to hear from Audiophile. We'll also take on the Inspiration to Action Challenge success stories, the craziness in the sideshow. And we're going to salute the songwriters who were inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame just last week. So let's start with some music. This one, I think, gets you going on a Tuesday, especially one where we'll talk about some pretty heavy topics. It's the Staple Singers. Respect yourself. The Amy Bender Show. Up aboard.
The Bible.
Thinking when they came up with that band name, and that's why they're mostly known as Lady A these days, because names, symbols, they do matter, indeed. We're talking about the Confederate flag coming down, and it's way past time, I would think. And for the last week or so, since people were calling for it after the horrible massacre in Charleston, South Carolina, a lot of the politicians were kind of punting, including Governor Nikki Haley, who yesterday came out and said it is time, but she had to get a consensus from other politicians, the go-ahead perhaps from the Republican Party's standard bearer for now, Mitt Romney, who tweeted that it has to come down. And to his credit, and I'm not a big Romney fan, he was for getting rid of it, I believe, when he ran for president. John McCain has come out and said that he kind of dodged and weaved, as so many politicians do, because he was afraid of the fallout and that he wouldn't win the South Carolina primary, and he regrets that. So you got to stand up for something if you're running for something, right? You may lose, but stand up for something, for goodness sakes. It's not all about just pandering, which so many of the Republican candidates now are trying to do. Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Rick Santorum, they fall back on it's a state's issue. Well, yeah, it's a state's issue. It's also a nation's issue. And the fact is the Confederate flag symbolizes some pretty horrific things for so many people. I mean, the truth is you lost the war. So it's kind of treasonous to fly it. Now, it's not flown at the state capitol officially because of that compromise they made 15 years ago. It's on a memorial that's very close. It belongs in a museum. And, yes, it could be part of your heritage, and if your ancestors fought and died in the Civil War, I get that. But most of these people, and if you see them on TV, they're turning themselves into pretzels to try to come up with a good reason why the flag should still fly. The truth is it also was appropriated in the early 60s as a symbol of hate and oppression following at the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. So it really was appropriated by racists. You could say what you want about the heritage. It was appropriated for that purpose, and that's why it stands and flies near the state capitol where Reverend Clemente Pinckney will have his body in state on Wednesday and his funeral will be held on Friday. That seems abhorrent to me that it's still flying. Now, I think there was somebody on CNN asked one of the state senators who also did the bob and weave a little more eloquently than some of them about why maybe it should stand because of the compromise they made 15 years ago. But he kind of admitted that, yeah, at least it should come down for the man's memorial and tribute. So if it's going to come down for memorial and tribute to an African-American politician, statesman, it should come down for everybody, don't you think? I mean, this is my take on it. I live in the North. It's not really my issue, I guess you would say, except it's my issue in terms of what it stands for in this country, and it really should come down. At least that's what I think. What do you think? Let us know. Twitter feed AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505, and pretty amused at the politicians. I know a lot of people were saying, not giving any props to Governor Haley, and I'm not either. I think it's a portrait of convenient courage, really. That's what I call it. But better late than never. I mean, if you're doing the right thing, you're doing the right thing, even if it's coming a little late in the game, if you know what I'm saying. So a couple other things. Yeah, Walmart, Fred says Walmart is not selling Confederate flag merchandise. I saw one guy, a racist, say Walmart's not the be-all and end-all. Yeah, I think I saw that same guy, yeah. And I think he also added Walmart used to be a Southern company. So I don't know. There's still a lot of that stuff embedded in people. Some people. And I don't want to paint a brush with anybody and everybody. There's racists in the North, too. We all have to cop to it. I think the fact is we don't want to talk about it. And we've done several shows on this issue. If you don't talk about it, you can't get past it. You can't grow from it. Alexander says, so they want to get rid of the Confederate flag as if the current one is not associated with some pretty gruesome crimes. You know, you're right, Alexander. It's true. But we're also credited with our ideals. And it is our flag, because we are one nation, and we won. I mean, what would the world be like if we hadn't won? Let's think about that. Harvey says, Confederate flag, way past time to come down from the South Carolina Capitol. It looks like it will, but, of course, they have the vacation schedule coming up, and I think I saw somebody say today that they might not get it down officially until mid-July, because next week is a vacation week, or, coming up is July 4th weekend or whatever. But we'll see. We'll see how quickly they can do it. There's a rally today, and I think, when people want to get things done, and this is where I'm leaning towards when we talk about gun control, too, things can get done if there's enough momentum and there's enough of an uproar among the people, because the politicians don't always lead. They take the lead from the electorate, from you and me. So if we're all up in arms and we're all pushing and we're all talking and we're all saying we have to do this, look what's happening. Look what happened in less than a week with these politicians who weren't budging for a long time. It's happening, I think. So we'll see. And there's now some word that it may happen in Mississippi, too. So go know. Michael says, I just found out my friends and I were racist when we were kids and put up pictures of the Dukes of Hazzard lunchbox and thermos with the big Confederate flag on a thermos. That's true. I think there was a guy who was a senator or a congressman from Georgia, a past congressman from Georgia, who also was featured on the Dukes of Hazzard, who was one of these people, contorting himself into a pretzel to defend the use and the flying of the Confederate flag. Look, you know what you know when you know it. You get better as you go. And, there has to be forgiveness there, too. And the people who showed so much forgiveness, the families of those victims, the biggest, fastest show of love and forgiveness, I've never seen that. And that really does, show the truest sense of what Christian means, right? I mean, just loving, forgiving, turning the other cheek, all of that. It's amazing the amount of grace that was displayed to this horrific criminal, this killer, who sat with these people, these good people in fellowship, welcomed him into that church for an hour. And then he had the audacity, he still had that hate in his heart, that sickness in his heart, to kill all those people. And I think when he was confessing, he did say something about, I almost didn't do it because they were so nice to me. It's like, oh my gosh, how horrible is this person, and how damaged is this man's soul that he could do that and to sit with people like that and then go ahead and kill them. And when some young man got up and said, please don't do this, and he shielded another worshiper, and he got shot, he said, I have to do it. And then he made his racist comments about the blacks are taking over and you're killing and you're raping our women and that kind of thing. Which still, after those comments were made on Fox News, by the way, they were calling it an attack on Christianity because it happened in a church. They said, well, it didn't happen in a bowling alley. It didn't happen in a bar. So it was, they didn't look at the racist angle. Well, maybe it was an attack on Christianity in some way, but it was definitely a racist attack at its heart. They finally came around, too. I don't understand. Please help me figure this out. Why are we so reluctant to admit there's racism in our midst? To admit we all have racist thoughts sometimes. To admit all that stuff, to admit the fears and the prejudices, is the only way we're going to overcome them. And I don't think it shouldn't be a red-blue America divide. It shouldn't be a Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative divide. There should be people on all sides, in good faith, acknowledging these things and not pretending it doesn't exist. I don't know what pretending it doesn't exist does to help anybody in any way. I still don't get that. And we've had many discussions about this on this show, you know, following the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin thing, which, by the way, this kid referenced also. He believed he became radicalized after the Trayvon Martin incident, which I don't get because Zimmerman was acquitted. I mean, I don't agree with the decision of the court, but that's what happened. But he said that Zimmerman was obviously in the right, and he did some research and saw how many black-on-white crimes there were, and then he decided that this was the action he had to take. Nobody's going to take it. Someone has to be brave enough, I'm paraphrasing, so I guess it'll have to be me. This is all part of his so-called manifesto. When you see the word manifesto attached to anything that you may see online or on Facebook, please alert somebody, because that usually means not a good thing. And what about these kids? This guy had some friends. He was basically a loner, but he did have some friends, including an African-American young man, who did not take his rant seriously. I think there was something that I think the FBI leakers profiles call leakage. People leak things. And in psychology, we call that, too. You know, you're showing things. Your intentions, your feelings are coming through with little things you say and do. And if he's making these rants, why not take this stuff seriously? I mean, it's very easy to dismiss it. I'm not at all trying to cast aspersions over these kids, his friends, or even his family. His family also claims they didn't know anything about this. Although they knew he was strange, there was first talk that they bought him the gun, then it was he had birthday money and he bought the gun with the money, and the mother tried to take it away, he took it back. You know, I don't know. I'm not quick to judge the family at this point. I mean, you have to say, you have to learn this kind of hatred. It comes from somewhere. But you could learn it beyond your family, so I'm not going to throw them under the bus because I don't know that they were racist. They say he got corrupted by the Internet. There is a lot of bad stuff on the Internet. We know that. We talk about this all the time. You can go towards the good stuff. There's also some great stuff on the Internet and great sources and ways that can help boost you in terms of your career, your creativity, your communication, connections, all those things. But it can also lure you down some pretty dark paths. Now, you have to want to go down those paths, too, so you have to take some responsibility, clearly. But you have to look out for each other. And this is what I'm saying. Friends, where were his friends in this? Where was his family if they saw that he was going down the wrong path? They saw that he was isolating. They saw that he kind of dropped out of life. I mean, he dropped out of school in the ninth grade, I think they said, right? Couldn't hold a job. Went around all these slavery sites, Confederate sites. He was wearing lots of pictures. I'm sure he was posting them because he had a Facebook page, right? Posting pictures of Confederate flags and guns. He had the badge of Rhodesia. He had the badge of apartheid South Africa that he was wearing. These are telltale signs. Reach out. Try to help somebody off that edge and going down that dark path. I think it's really important to do. Reach out. Let us know what you're thinking. Twitter feed is AB Writes. The phone line, if you're listening live on Tuesday, June 23rd, is 347-857-4505. This is a great song. It also salutes one of the inductees into the Songwriters Hall of Fame last week, Bobby Braddock, country singer-songwriter. This is a powerful one. It kind of sums up a lot of the stuff we're talking about today. It's called Thou Shalt Not Kill on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show.
I heard their conversation loud and clear from where I sat. He was a Republican, she was a Democrat. They talked about the Bible and the issues of the day. The discussion discussion grew more heated, and I heard him say, "Thou shalt not kill little babies living in their mama's womb. Thou shalt not kill little ladies who can't use a fork or spoon. Thou shalt not kill those who want to die to just escape the gloom. Thou shalt not." Don't condescend me, 'cause I know the Bible too, and I bet I'll get to heaven just as quick as you. I asked for my ticket so I could be on my way, and as I walked out the door, I heard the lady say, "Thou shalt not kill helpless children in some crazy war somewhere. Thou shalt not kill by injection, gas chamber, or the chair. Thou shalt not kill with poison water or polluted air. Thou shalt not kill." I got home at midnight and I climbed into my bed. The words that I had heard that night kept running through my head. Then I dreamed the clouds rolled back and lightning filled the sky. And there stood God Almighty looking me right in the eye. "Thou shalt not kill, what did you mean, Lord? And who did you mean? Thou shalt not kill," he said, "you read it right, I said it right before. Thou shalt not kill, if that were not enough, I would have told you more. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill." Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill.
On with the show! Sugar Magnolia, ringing that bluebell.
On the Amy Beth Arcoe Show, another inductee into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, Cyndi Lauper, who back when she started in the 80s, they told her to just stand there, look pretty or crazy or whatever, and sing the songs. They didn't want her to write her own songs, but she had other ideas, and she did. Wow. Big body of work for her over these last 30 or so years. And also, Tony for composing last year in Kinky Boots. Talking about some pretty impressive stuff. Congratulations, Cyndi. Also, the Grateful Dead's Sugar Magnolia with Robert Hunter getting a nod into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. He co-wrote so many of the Dead's classics with his great compatriot, Jerry Garcia, songs like Uncle John's Band, Sugar Magnolia, Bertha, to name a few. Wow, good stuff. We're looking for the Toby. We have Toby Keith also is inducted. He's a country singer-songwriter. Not sure what happened to that cup, but if we don't have it today, we'll play it for you next time, and we'll have a Lifetime Achievement Award winner a bit later. The A.B. Bethurkwi shows, we take on some of the hot topics that have come out of the fallout in the Charleston, South Carolina church massacre. Wow, some big stories. Gun control is on the list, too, of course, and it's always too soon after one of these shootings for the NRA to start talking about it. No, too soon, don't talk about it. But people are talking about it, and one of the most surprising comments, and I think it was walked back a bit, was Karl Rove, the Republican strategist, once called Bush's brain, you remember him. He said the only way to deal with gun control, gun issue in this country, gun violence, is to repeal the Second Amendment. And you know what? He may be onto something. I think he might have been facetious, or he kind of said that's not what he meant. But maybe he's right, because if you look at the Second Amendment, there's nothing in there that says about AK-47s or unlimited amounts of ammunition. I believe they had muskets back then. So I always say, let's turn in the your handguns, turn in your rifles, turn in your machine guns, and we'll give you a musket. Maybe unlimited muskets would be all right. I don't know. We have to work that out. They maybe have to revisit it. I think that's probably a good idea. And just, you know, being complacent on this issue, I know it hasn't happened. And when President Obama came out last week, he did look tired and he did look run down from this issue, because he said, I know the political climate is such that we're not going to get anything done. And then he had to walk that back by saying he still has resolve. You got a little time left, Obama. Use the bully pulpit. Just try to push this through, because I know the cynical knee-jerk reaction, and I had it too last week, was to say, you know, it's not going to happen. If they couldn't do anything after Sandy Hook, when you had 20 little children, 5 and 6-year-olds getting killed, I don't know what they're going to do now that there are 9 African-American people killed in a church. But that's a cynical reaction, because it all adds up, and there's too much of it, and at some point you have to say this has got to stop. And there are people that have been fighting since Newtown, quite frankly. Connecticut did enhance their laws. New York did enhance their laws. The problem is you go state to state and over the lines and all that kind of stuff, so it's a problem. And this country is messy. You know, you talk about there's just so many different rules and regs depending on what side of the border you're standing on. So it's hard, but we can't give up the fight, and I think you have to change the culture. I mean, think about this. I mean, think about smoking in our culture, right? I mean, there are still people that smoke, but far less smoke now than smoked 20 years ago, 50 years ago, because we know more about the dangers that it causes. But there's also less ease to smoke in public places. There's almost nowhere you can smoke now. You can't smoke in restaurants and bars. Maybe a few select places have it where you can smoke in bars, but you have to go outside, and even outside areas are now restricted. It's made it uncomfortable for people to do it, inconvenient for people to do it, and so less people are doing it. Seatbelts. Most people wear their seatbelts now because it's the law. You know, click it or ticket, whatever that campaign was. Texting and driving is now a big thing, and they're trying to combat that. So there are things that you can do that are public policies, or not even necessarily laws, but just to change the culture and move it along, and you can't give up on that. And the NRA, I know, likes to pull out these things, and I've talked to a lot of these people on various radio shows over the years after you have one of these shootings, and they come on, and their big solution is to have more people have guns. You know, when there's a school shooting, let's have teachers have guns. Let's have people be armed. What could go wrong with that? I mean, that to me sounds like the most ridiculous idea. Because teachers with guns in classrooms, first of all, even if you have it locked up, you have to get to it then if there's, God forbid, an incident. What happens if a kid gets a hold of it and there's an accident? Or the teacher flips out? Or something, again, an accident. The truth is this. Now, you can have your guns and you can stand by your Second Amendment. And I don't have a gun. I don't own a gun. I never fired a gun. I've held prop guns for theater productions, that kind of thing. But I'm not a gun person, so to me it doesn't matter. But I do know the stats that if you have a gun and it makes you feel safe to have the gun at home for protection, the truth is you're more likely, if you have that gun in your house, to have an accident with that gun, to have a suicide in that house, to have a homicide in that house, than you are if you don't have it. So let's just face that. Then if you want to take the risk because for whatever reason it makes you feel safer or empowered or whatever it is, that's your choice. But you have to know the facts. And the NRA coming up with these stories that, and other people coming up with these stories that it's a good idea to have more people armed, to me they live in a Clint Eastwood movie where there's one good guy in that room that has a gun and is a sharpshooter and can take out that person instantly and nobody else will get hurt once the guy fires. Unfortunately, life doesn't work out that way. It's messier. You have people, even if they have good intentions, something can go awry and probably will go awry in most cases. So I am not for arming more people and thinking that's a good idea. you know, the idea that, well, if the bad guys have it, the good guys should have it too. Then you have a Wild West mentality, and I think we're going to have a lot more incidents and problems with that. But, you know, do you have to accept this as a new normal? I read an interesting piece about this on Bill Moyer's website, Moyers & Company. A man named Cliff Schechter wrote this last week. Say no to the new normal, five things you can do about gun violence. And basically, he says some of the things I've been saying. Change your culture. You know, the aim of the gun lobby is to make the open and concealed carry of guns the norm everywhere. Look at some of these laws, like in Georgia. I don't know about South Carolina, but Georgia and Texas, I believe, have passed laws where you can openly carry guns into places like bars and playgrounds. I mean, why is that a good idea? You know, do you want to walk around with a gun at your local grocery store? You've seen that, where the gun went off in a Walmart, and actually a little kid killed his mother because he got her gun, and by accident, you know, this is what I'm talking about. Accidents happen. It's not always done because of malevolence. So you want to demand that that's not possible. And there are groups like Moms Demand Action and the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Tell companies like Target, like Walmart, that you don't want this. You know, let Target know that if loaded guns are going to be left in the toy aisle for your children to find, you'll find another place to shop. You know, it's ridiculous. Stop investing in guns. The Campaign to Unload has done a brilliant job of pressuring large private equity firms, hedge funds, and other investors to get out of the business of guns. This has led to over $171 million being pulled out of gun companies in 2013 alone. So, there are things that can be done. Reach out. Your views. A.B. Wright's phone line 347-857-4505. Intriguing songs rounded out nicely. Well, thank you, Nixie. I do appreciate that. Thanks for listening. Jimmy chiming in. Yeah, the flag has to come down, but let's not forget about the hypocrisy of all America. Americans. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's true. We have a lot of albatrosses around our necks in this country, no question, but I think you have to talk about it and cop to it. And the truth is our flag of the country. The Confederate flag is not the flag of our country because they lost. It's just as simple as that in the most basic terms, but what it symbolizes, I think, broadens it out. And I think the American flag, although some bad acts have been certainly committed in America, we also stand for great ideals. We're aspiring. We're always aspiring to that, and that is our flag. So there is a difference, but I do know what you're saying, and I think it all comes down to the idea of discussing it and admitting our ills and comping to it, and don't be afraid to go there. Everybody's afraid to go there. I don't know. It's like we got to talk it out, and maybe you can hug it out. I don't know. We have a very strange culture. On the crazier side of things, we are really rewarding bad behavior these days in ways that are just they're kind of disheartening. I mean, look at Alex Rodriguez. Yes, he hit 3,000 hits. Congratulations, all that. But he's got to have an asterisk next to his name because he did a lot of his hitting on steroids. And, you know, like Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa before him, these are people who are not going to make it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, and shouldn't. I mean, you know, Pete Rose they're not letting in. Now there's new revelations about Pete Rose, by the way, that he may have betted on baseball while he was still playing baseball. So I guess his chances of ever getting into the Hall are out there. I don't know. I'm not condoning what Pete Rose did by any means, but he didn't cheat while he played. I mean, even if he bet on the games, and that's not good, and I'm not saying he should be in the Hall, but it is different than actually cheating on the game, which is what Alex Rodriguez did. So I can't be saluting this guy in any great way that so many people are. And now there's big kerfuffle over the ball, the home run ball that was caught for the 3,000 hit, and the guy has it. And a lot of people are saying, oh, he should just give it to him as a gesture of goodwill. Well, he can make a lot of money as a memorabilia collector. He can make maybe $1 million with that. Well, if they want that ball so badly, maybe Alex Rodriguez should pay this guy $1 million. I mean, why should he have to just give it back? And what, get another ball or a T-shirt that's worth nothing? You know, I'm not that, I don't know. It's up to him. But some people say, well, it'll be a nice gesture. It will be a nice gesture to reward this guy, too, because Rodriguez, and last year they said, well, when Jeter did it, the guy just returned it to him. Well, I don't know what the guy got in return, but Jeter also should have given him some money for it because, again, these people have tons of money, and a poor schlub in the stands catches the ball. This might be his big payday. I don't care. I'm not that sentimental about it. It's a nice gesture, but do something in exchange. You want the ball back, maybe you should pay for it. Just saying, my opinion, what's yours? Twitter feed at AB Writes. The other big story, of course, you heard about in media, Lion Brian Williams is indeed coming back to NBC. No, not in the nightly news chair. Lester Holt finally got the permanent gig. Congratulations, well-deserved to the hardest-working man at that network. But I didn't think they could possibly take him back, but they did. They're sending him back to the minors. He will be the face and voice of breaking news on MSNBC to start with. MSNBC is their beleaguered cable outlet, which has very low ratings. It's basically a bastion of liberal talk in the evenings. They're trying to make more straight news during the day and maybe at night as well. Who knows? But there's some talk that maybe he'll have his own show eventually. At one point, he had a show on MSNBC when he first started. The question is, will it help MSNBC? Well, I guess the ratings can't get any lower, so it's a safe bet to put him there to see if there's some goodwill that he can reclaim himself. And I am also all about second chances and redemption. But I think the pendulum has swung a little bit too far. We've gone from, as you know, I reference this a lot, the quiz show days, when that poor guy, Charles Van Doren, was pretty much exiled because he took some answers on a game show and couldn't reclaim his life and his professorship and other things, to where people get paid to act badly on television for reality shows. To a guy like Brian Williams, what is he, too big to fail like the banks? There's no cost to pay for what he did? Now, yeah, I believe in redemption, but he lied on many occasions, and NBC is not releasing their internal investigation, but they admit it was several times. Although they say it was mostly not done on NBC platforms. In other words, he pretty much bragged about stories on that he covered and put himself closer proximity to danger on talk shows, etc. He had his little apology interview, which I only saw part of with Matt Lauer last week on the Today Show, and most folks who saw the whole thing said he didn't do himself any favors because he didn't really own it that much. He kind of just said his ego got the best of him, and he kind of fell into self-aggrandizement when he went on these shows and made himself bigger and better and all that. I don't know if that's enough. Again, we're talking about a news anchor where credibility is your calling card. I mean, I'm thinking if he's so affable and great on talk shows, give him a show on MSNBC and let him be a raconteur like Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly is a bloviator who very often distorts the facts, and nobody at Fox News seems to care, and his audience doesn't seem to care. He's got the biggest ratings in cable. So maybe that would work for Brian Williams, and I'm okay with that, actually. You know, if you want to give him that. But to put him in the news chair and make him a news anchor where credibility is your calling card, I do have a problem with that, and I don't understand why there isn't some punitive repercussions. He said he went through hell, his family went through hell, but he has a big contract, which, you know, in my opinion, there should be some morality clause. If you bring down yourself and you cause your own problem, they shouldn't have to pay him anyway, but they probably would have paid him. And even if they didn't pay him, had he left, he has enough money, so wouldn't be crying the blues over his income and his survival and his family's survival. It's more a matter of ego. It's more a matter of reputation. I understand he wants to try to get his reputation back. Why not hire Jason Blair for a show, the disgraced former New York Times reporter who made up all those stories? I mean, where's his second chance? You know what I'm saying? I just think at some point there is something where this is just not going to work, at least for now. I mean, maybe go away and, again, write a book, go on a Mea Culpa talk show tour, maybe get a commentary show on MSNBC or some other place. Who knows? But to come back as an anchor, even in a low-rated cable wasteland, that says something bad about NBC, in my opinion. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh, but I just don't get it. I mean, I know he has a fan base. There were people who had that Bring Back Brian Williams fan page on Facebook, and I saw one of their founders on the Reliable Sources show on CNN last Sunday, and she said, well, she was upset that he wasn't coming back to the nightly news. You know, I understand what they had to do, but, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody needs a second chance. Well, yeah, but this is a series, like a serial liar. You want a serial liar being your face of news, either on your network platform or even on your cable platform? No, I don't. What about you? Reach out via Twitter, AV Wright's phone line, of course, 347-857-4505, if you should be listening live on Tuesday, June 23rd. I'm thinking no.
You do not test well, at all. In fact, according to our latest figures, even the mention of your name is a ratings risk.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. Well, now, home entertainment was my baby's wish, so I hopped to town for a satellite dish. I tied it to the top of my Japanese car. Came home when I pointed it out into the stars. A message came back from the great beyond. It's 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. Well, we might have made some friends with some billionaires. We might have got all nice and friendly if we made it upstairs. All I got
57 channels and nothing on. Springsteen on the Amy Beth Arkley Show. I think we're up to about 157 channels, and there's still nothing on. Now, there's some good things on, actually. Not True Detective, I'm kind of disappointed in that. The new HBO installment of that series. Whole new storyline. Maybe I just got to get into it more, but underwhelmed on Sunday. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. Also, The Castaways and Liar Liar for Lion Brian Williams. He made it back. Well, sort of. He's trying to make it back. Going to be an MSNBC back in August. Your take at AB Writes. Angus says, my wife says Rachel Dolezal is like Brian Williams. Can't help themselves. Maybe. And with that in mind, Ellie says, I wonder what the ratings would be like if Brian Williams interviewed Dolezal. Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, in that case, who's zooming who? And somebody said, who was that? I think it was Frankie said, yeah, it was just a year ago when Brian Williams interviewed Edward Snowden. Fake takes on fake. See what I'm saying about credibility? And this one is very telling. Shell says, and I think this says a lot about it, never mind Brian Williams getting his reputation back, NBC just blew theirs. Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I mean, where is their credibility in all of this? I think the Peacock Network has certainly taken a big hit by just letting it go and not releasing the report, which I think is fascinating. I mean, really, as a news organization, you press for those things, right? You'd be foiling like crazy. I want to see the, you know, want to see the report, what's going on. You wouldn't take that from a corporation. You wouldn't take that from a politician. And yet, they're not going to go into it. They're not going to release their findings, but they're just going to say there were several incidents. To me, that's underplaying it, whitewashing, which we seem to do a lot of. There's a lot of minimizing going on in this country about a lot of things. And this is just another example. Too big to fail. It's crazy. It really is. Yes, it comes down to money, and I guess they think this guy has got enough fan base. We'll see. Let's talk about the Inspiration Action Challenge success story. Shout-out today going out to Colin, who is in Missouri. I'm not sure what city. He says he's a singer-songwriter, and I'm booking some gigs and getting serious. You help me focus and really celebrate my talents and my desires. So thank you so much. Well, thank you, Colin. I'm so happy it's working for you. Hey, if the Inspiration Action Challenge has worked for you, I'd love to give you a pat on the back because I think you deserve it, and I also think it helps other folks. So write to us via the website, amybetharkowee.com, and we'll give you that shout-out when we can. And on the other hand, if you're having some struggles in the creativity department or anything else that's on your mind that you want to work out, I can help you out with a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one is always on me. The website is the place to go, amybetharkowee.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed, so if you get vexed by the last name, you'll get through it. Or Google it. It'll come up. You'll see. It works out. But I know it's spelling it is sometimes difficult. Speaking of singer-songwriters, the Songwriters Hall of Fame inducted a slew of folks, and their Lifetime Achievement Award went to a very impressive man, one of our favorites around here, the Irish singer-songwriter Van Morrison. Oh, my goodness, you talk about endurance, you talk about talent, and this man is prolific, and he's still going strong, well into his 60s. And you know what? He hasn't rested on his laurels, and he's not rehashing the same old stuff. It's new. It's vigorous. It might not get played every day on, you know, Top 40 radio like it once did, but it is great, and you can catch it on alternative radio stations and the Internet, etc. And he's certainly into a lot of blue money, I guess. So, Google accounting. Photographer's smile, take your brain away, take a risk, do your very best, take 500. In your bag, light up a bag, fake it to drag, but you're so glad to be alive, honey, laugh, honey. Then when this is all over, you'll be in clover, we'll go out and spend all of your blue money, blue money. Do it, do you do it, do it.
Yeah. There's one thing that could make it all better. Editing.
With the television on, and J.D. McPherson, a young guy with an old-time rock and roll sound, Northside Gal, and a pair from Van Morrison, this year's Songwriter Hall of Fame Lifetime Achievement recipient, and Brand New Day from the Moondance Masterpiece and Blue Money. Wow, well-deserved. What an enduring career. It is the Annabeth Erkley Show. A few minutes left here, 347-857-4505 for Tuesday, June 23rd, and the Twitter feed, of course, at A.B. Wrights. Folks still chiming in about Brian Williams. Alan says, Catch Me If You Can was Brian Williams' all-time favorite movie until Leo eventually got caught. Now he watches a lot of Jackass. Ouch. And AJ says that MSNBC staff once chanted F Brian Williams at a party and linked the page 6 of the New York Post story that I guess ran today or yesterday. Apparently there was, remember Brian Williams a couple years ago had a short-lived primetime show called Rock Center where they did a news magazine type show, and apparently did a report on cable TV and the corrosive nature of it and how it was toxic and not helping compromise, etc. They featured Bill O'Reilly, Ann Coulter, Bill Maher, and the late New York Times columnist David Carr. MSNBC people refused to participate, although they mentioned Lawrence O'Donnell, and apparently the rank and file, according to this article on page 6 at MSNBC, were so furious at Brian, they hated it so much, they were still mad about it months later at the office Christmas party where they cheered F. Brian Williams. It was like a rallying cry, one source said. At MSNBC, one source insisted, this piece was a few years ago, stirring it up today, it sounds like the chatter of nervous competitors. All right. For her part, Rachel Maddow, who is basically the highest-rated, if you can call it that, show host on MSNBC, but she still falls way behind CNN and Fox, etc., said last week on the air that she was really, really happy about Williams joining MSNBC. She says she believes in second chances, but to quote Rachel Maddow, she says, it is quite possible that I am causing some spilkus somewhere in this building because I'm talking about this. So, who knows? We're not exactly sure what he'll do, when he'll start. I guess sometimes in August. And I think it's going to be, you know, he'll start off breaking news, and then he'll probably grow into an expanded role because I think they're rebooting it, retooling it, and some of those hosts will be out on their arses, so to speak, as they probably head more in the direction of CNN with more late-breaking straight news, maybe more documentaries, less lockup, for goodness sakes, I hope. Those jail shows are getting old real fast. And maybe some more crime stories, though. You know, the true justice kind of stuff that used to be on Court TV, when Court TV devolved into a bastion of low-rent reality stuff. It was taken over by its stepsister station, HLN, but that kind of fell off, too, because of money reasons. They have two shows now, Nancy Grace and God Help Us, Dr. Drew, and a lot of forensic files and a lot of video sharing during the day with, younger, obviously less expensive hosts who don't really know what they're doing or what they're talking about. So when they handle tough subjects, you really don't want to watch that network. So I don't know. There's a room for it. I know when we had Beth Karras on the show, the Legal Eagle, who's covered a whole bunch of cases, primarily for Court TV in its heyday, I think there's a place for that kind of stuff. I mean, Dateline, you know, there are true crime shows. Dateline, of course, does a lot of the true crime stuff. But to have a network that kind of, maybe not focus the whole time on it, but maybe have some of that might be an interesting way to go. We'll see how it evolves, because it can devolve much more. That's for sure. Hey, you know what I saw this weekend? I want to point out a great movie called Love and Mercy. This is a rare pick in the summer because usually it's the big blockbusters that get all the attention. But this is the Brian Wilson biopic. It has gotten some great reviews, I believe. It's really well done. A lot of these rock and roll biopics are sometimes cheesy and low rent. But this one really does go into Brian Wilson's story. John Cusack plays Brian Wilson older in the 80s. He's in his 40s. And Paul Dana plays him as a younger man. And they flash back. And it's really well done. It is well done. And it really talks about how his current wife, Melinda Ledbetter, saved him. She was a car saleswoman He was roaming around looking for a Cadillac back in the 80s and was very much under the thumb of controversial psychologist Eugene Landy, who had him so doped up, misdiagnosed, and really ruled his life, and of course sapped away a lot of his money, too, in the bargain. They went on a date, and the whole entourage of people came, Eugene Landy and a couple of bodyguards. So it really was, it's moving, it's funny in spots, it's touching. There's some great music, of course, if you're a Beach Boys fan, you'll hear some of that great music. But, you know, the epilogue is he's living a decent life now. He's married, has been married to her for about 20 years. They adopted some children. So now in the 70s, I think I actually saw the movie on his birthday on Saturday. He just turned 73. You can tell he still has struggles, and they admit that, but he's has a rewarding life thanks to the love of this woman and better medication and a family now, and he can create, and he really is a genius for sure. You hear some of that great music, including his solo classic, Love and Mercy, which kind of is appropriate for today in so many ways, too.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to bring a special guest up here now. Brian Wilson, everybody.
Well, school's not so bad, but comes summer, almost June, the sun is bright.
Here comes summer.
Here comes summer, driving movies every night.
Double features.
Double features, lots more time to hold her tight.
So let the sun shine bright.
It's summertime, 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 summertime. Shut them books and throw them away. Say goodbye to doleful days. Look alive and change your ways. It's summertime. Well, no more studying history and no more reading geography and no more dalgy. I'm free because it's summertime, 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 summertime. It's summertime.
It's summertime. The Jamies on the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Time to have some fun and thrills. Also, of course, Jerry Keller and Here Comes Summer. It's here. Speaking of summer hours, you'll hear less live new shows on the Amy Beth Arkley Show in July and August. We have our summer hours, but we will have our summer encore series featuring some of our favorite conversations and music specials. A couple of live shows around the corner, too. We have some pop-up coffee clashes, so stay tuned. Friend me on Facebook. You'll get your updates on the Radio Graffiti update page. You can follow our producer, Trudy Hard, at Twitter, at Radio Trudy. And you can, of course, follow me for the 24/7 Twitter conversation. Never takes a vacation, by the way, at AB Wright. So we'll definitely keep in touch because I want to have some fun and frolic in the sand and sun. And, oh, yeah, that pesky book deadline, too. We'll get through it. Hey, thanks again going out to the TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters. Thank you so much for tweeting with us in live time, and don't forget to keep doing it off time as well because we like to take the lead from you and the stories that you want to cover and talk about. Indeed. So I guess we're sashaying out of here, is that true?
Goodbye, sweetheart, well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Almost ready to go. We'll make a note that we're off on Friday, but back next Tuesday, June 30th, with Martha Ertman, the law professor and author, talking about the changing face of marriage in America as we wait for the Supreme Court to come down on a couple of big decisions, including same-sex marriage. So we'll talk. We still have some hot topics to discuss in detail.
Since you've all been such good boys and girls, I would like to take everybody in this entire audience out for milk and cookies. There are buttons outside. Everybody, follow me.
What a sweet way to wrap up the show. Hey, drive safe, play nice, dream big. Please come back and see us on the Amy Beth Erkowitz Show. I'm going to leave you with The Alternate Roots, a song they dedicated in the wake of that horrible tragedy in Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. It applies today, too. We are here to love and nothing more. Reach out to someone. Take care.
Peace.